Hello there, and welcome to the Paradox Podcast. We are starting a series in the book of Ecclesiastes, which is about losing faith. So what better way to start this series than by talking to an atheist? Today's episode features Tyler Fullerton. This past Saturday at Paradox, I got to interview Tyler Fullerton and ask him about losing faith. Before we get to the recording of that interview, I would like to begin this podcast by reading to you the introduction letter I wrote for Tyler that I read on Saturday. Now, at Paradox, to introduce speakers, I write a letter to the person who is our guest speaker and just explain why we are grateful for their work and why we are grateful for why they are there. So with that in mind, I'm going to read this letter and then we'll get to the interview with Tyler. This letter reads, "Dear Tyler, we first met over 14 years ago as freshman architecture students at Montana State University in the inadequately oxygenated basement of Romney Hall. So many hours passed by in Romney as we toiled over museum board and gouache. While we waited for our glue to dry, you and I talked about life, architecture, Super Smash Brothers, and religion, or lack thereof. For the first 4 months, we were courteous toward each other's beliefs. But close to midnight on a Saturday evening in December, the dam burst, and we decided to move our polite discussions about faith to a full contact debate. I know you know this, but I have never admitted this to you until today. You steamrolled me in that debate. You brought up the Epicurean paradox, which establishes that God cannot be all-loving and all-powerful due to the sheer volume of suffering in the world. You discussed the incredible merits of science and how our technological advances undermine many central doctrines of American Christianity. And you revealed the cruelty of the God who I believe to be good by talking about the dehumanizing horror of eternal judgment. As you moved from point to point, I scrambled to stammer out the boilerplate answers that the church told me to say in a situation like this. But you, Tyler, met each of these stock solutions with an awkward pause, and then you looked at me and asked, 'Craig, is that what someone told you to say, or do you actually believe that?' Now, this may be hard to believe, but at that point in my life, no one had ever asked me that question before you. Do you actually believe that? I was 21 years old, and you asked me this question. I grew up in church school and attended church almost every weekend. In all of the hours under the instruction of teachers, I was frequently told, 'This is what you should believe.' The closest I got to another person asking me your question was when I sat through baptismal classes at the age of 18. At the conclusion of these classes, the pastor asked me, 'Do you accept the teachings of the church?' Which is fundamentally different than the question you ask me. Do you actually believe that? You asked me this question throughout our time together in college, and this question is one of the greatest gifts I have ever received. The reason I talk about this question as a gift is because it demonstrated that you took my faith seriously. You listened to what I had to say. You disagreed with most of it. You pointed out the ludicrous logic in some of my professed doctrines. And then you asked me to stop being a mimicking parrot and instead to personally own what I believe. Your question set me on a trajectory to ask tough questions about my faith. And when I write sermons today, 14 years later, I ask myself that same question. Do we actually believe this? The church often told me to be suspicious of people who do not believe the same things as me. In other words, I needed to be suspicious of people like you. The church warned me that friendships with atheists or agnostics would most certainly cause me to backslide and blind me to the life and teachings of Jesus Christ. But what I found in over 14 years of friendship with you is that the opposite is true. My friendship with an atheist gave me a greater understanding of Jesus Christ. If this sounds like a paradox, well then welcome. I'm glad you are here. Tyler, you are my friend, you are my brother, and you are my teacher. Thank you for taking my faith seriously enough to ask me the question, do you actually believe that? And thank you for being here with us at Paradox today. Sincerely, Craig." Here is the recording of my interview with Tyler.
Yeah, wow, thank you. I hadn't seen that yet. And
You mean a lot to me, Tyler.
Warm my
you mean
heart.
A lot to me. It's
made me feel really
I
bad.
Think these people know because you don't come in here unannounced. They hear stories about you.
Yeah.
And I only tell stories where you win because I want them to like you.
Well, I just gotta get out of here without ruining it.
Yeah, I guess so. So Tyler, how would you describe your current religious identity and what does that mean?
Well, I'm glad you got the kids out of here first, but not all of it.
We do that every week, by the way.
Okay,
that's not
sure.
That's not just for you.
I think I've gone full atheist from the agnostic in the college.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm full on the on that spectrum.
Let's change my questions here. So what does it mean to be an atheist then to you?
Well, I think a lot of people in here are atheists. Like you are for a lot of the religion. Like all of the Indian gods. Like, do you believe in them? No. I'm guessing. I just believe in one less god than everybody in here. You know? So it's.
Now, did you grow up in the church? And if you did, what was that like?
My mother was very religious, and she went to Bible study every week and all that. And I went to church, and I totally believed everything, and I was. Everything in my head was like constructed in this, the paradigm of like all the religious stuff. And yeah, so we would go to church, we'd go on Christmas and Easter and all the, but it wasn't, I'm an only child. Like I didn't have like this big support of like other people pushing it on me. So it was like, I had to believe it and that's it.
And when did you like most believe it in your mind?
Oh man, Santa.
When you believed in Santa, you were like, "Oh God, it's true."
No. I believed in all of it. In Jesus and like the whole resurrection, the saving people. I believed in hell and the fiery. You know, like you can't sin. You have to be a good person, or you're gonna, lose everything and be tortured your whole life. I believed all of that like strongly, and it. Like it scared me. Like it made me feel like I'm, you have to really believe this and you have to really follow it all or you're going, if you don't believe the right one, you're going to hell forever. Yeah.
What age was like the height of your belief?
Probably around like 14.
Uh-huh.
I was getting into arguments with kids in the high school. Like, they were like pro abortion or pro, helping people, and I was like, no, we need to get those others. And
I think I would pay like $1,000 to go back and see you arguing in defense of Christianity. That's like mind blowing to me, knowing what I know about you now.
Yeah.
And you're in Montana at this point, right? Like,
yep.
What city are you in?
I was in Big Fork, Montana. It was a.
Everyone knows where Big Fork is?
Yeah. 2,000 people live there.
It's next to Glacier National Park.
There's four or five churches. There's
which is a lot for how small Big Fork is.
For population. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of commandments out. Like people post the Ten Commandments in their yards. Like down the street, you'll see like every other yard has like a Ten Commandments thing.
So you're 14. You're a freshman in high school. About.
Yep.
When did things start to not make sense to you anymore?
I was thinking about that a lot, like before I got here.
Just hold the mic a little bit closer.
Okay.
There you go.
There's not like a bright line for me. There's not like this one thing. There were a lot of churches, and we had moved to Big Fork from another city, and so we didn't have like a church that was like. We're Seventh-day Adventists, or we're, whatever Protestant thing that. So I was asking myself, like, what is the right one? And, what is the thing that I should be believing? Like, is it, maybe it's Catholicism. Like, they're the oldest one that, believes in Jesus. So that's got some cred, right?
It does.
And then I would look at each aspect of, like, the things they believed in. And I would be like, okay, so is that right? So you have to. You ask about it, I was thinking about it, this Baptist thing, you know, the earth is whatever, 100 years old or whatever, you know.
Like, 100.
And you gotta, and you delve into it, and there's all this evidence that it's older than 100 years.
You know? Yeah.
So you're like, so you just start breaking it away, and it just, I kept chipping away until I was like, okay, well, I believe in a God. Like, I believe in that for sure. And I just, it just, like, it's what you were talking about with the paradox of, like, there's all this suffering, and there's this thing that doesn't want suffering and is omnipotent. Like, that doesn't, it just didn't work. I couldn't, and I couldn't put it in a box in my mind. I couldn't say, well, I believe in God, but I also know the reality.
Yeah.
And they conflicted, and I had to choose. Like, I didn't like it. It wasn't, like, the answer I wanted, but it's the one I came to.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Was there any fear in, like, leaving faith behind, or, like, saying to people, like, was any relationship affected, or did people start to view you differently because you started saying, like, ah, I'm not sure I believe this?
Yeah. Well, for a while, I wasn't, like, in college where I was, you know, like, picking fights or, like, you know, because I still was, like, I don't believe it, but I'm not sure. So I wasn't, like, out there, like,
in college, you were that way?
No,
oh,
until,
like,
college.
That's not
but
my
in college,
memory at all.
You know?
Yeah.
In college, I mean, it's all new friends, and you know, nobody has any expectations of, like, what you need to be believing before.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it just was it didn't kill anything. We still would go. I'd still go to church with my mom and on Christmas and stuff. And it didn't start bother. It's not for me, but it doesn't. I don't think it's bad.
Yeah.
So.
Now, you told me when you went to Christmas sermons at the church in Big Fork, you told me something about the sermon. Can you tell me, I'm trying to lead you a little bit because I know this is a story. Tell me about the Christmas service that happened and the sermon that was preached.
Well, there was one guy, he looked like the Home Improvement Al, you know, like this big jolly guy, and you know, but he would always do the same, like every year it was like, they have the same printout of, like, this is the candle service night, and we're gonna first you stand up, sit down, sing this, you know, sit down, stand up, and he would always say the same speech about, you know, and the manger was the only place that Mary could go, and that was, you know, when Jesus was born 2,000 years ago on this night, and all, you know, all that stuff. And every year it was exactly the same, and we had to hand in, like, the little pamphlets back so they could use it again next year, and it just was like. It was like, and at that point, I was with my parents, and we were just like, oh, now he's gonna do this. Oh, yeah, this is, and like, and then my mom started, like, trying not to laugh, because he was just, like, pulling out the, this is the manger story, when there was a census that had to be done, and everyone had to go back to, and, it was just this, kind of hacky.
And it was the same sermon word for word.
Word for word.
How many years in a row?
Until he left, which was about 5 years. And then they got a new guy, and he was doing the same thing, but he would add in, like, a bunch of mean stuff, like, about, like, you know, like, terrorism, and, like, you know, like, you know, it's the terrible world, and, you know, and now let's talk about them. Mary and Joseph went to...
Was there, like, ever a moment where you thought to yourself, okay, I don't believe in God anymore?
Yeah, I mean, in definitely in probably mid-college was, like, the full-on, like, mm-hmm. there's no way. Just and that was just by, like, I was, you know, getting into full, I took a lot of philosophy classes, and I just, yeah, there it just was not, it just didn't make sense. Like, I don't believe in a lot of things that don't, like, you know, you think of anything, like, that you can prove or disprove. You don't choose to, like, oh, I can walk across the street if I believe I won't get hit. Like, no, you look right, you look left. Like, you know, you have to develop these things. And for me, it just broke. Just couldn't keep it going.
Yeah. And so it was somewhere midway through college that you're like 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're saying that I was the one that drove you to atheism then, is that?
Yeah. Well, and now you're running a church.
I know,
so.
Right?
I mean, like, what did I do wrong?
Was there any fear or grieving you experienced when you walked away from faith?
Well, the good thing about like not believing in it is you don't feel like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble for this, because there's no one to get you in trouble because you don't believe in them.
Yeah.
So yeah, it felt good. I mean, you don't worry about, you know, like, what kind of prayer should I be doing? What, you know, how will I get to the Golden Gates? And, you know, so yeah, it felt great. I highly encourage everyone here to.
What has changed, like, when you look back at, like, when you're going to church and, like, when you were sort of believing it or really believing it and then sort of believing it and then now where you don't believe anymore? Like, what's changed about, like, your mindset or the way that you interact with other people?
Well, you have to replace it with something. Like, you have to, all the time in your life, you're going to say, like, what should I do? What's the right thing? And that has always interested me, and that was why I was so interested in philosophy and everything. And so you have to, like, think about, like, what is good? What's the right thing to, like, what should my belief be about refugees or about, you know, interracial marriage or, you know, like any. Like,
are you for it? Because I have some vested interest in
so
this.
Far, I mean, yeah.
Okay, that's good.
But, you know, all of these things, like, you know, like, homosexuals in the military, like, you know, like, well, is there a reason? Mm-hmm. And you can look at science and facts and, you know, if you look at what one guy is saying in a, you know, in a church somewhere, that doesn't necessarily make it true. Mm-hmm. And everyone has different opinions, except for Craig.
No. So where do you, like, I know one thing that I was told over and over again, like growing up in the church, is that atheists, agnostics, they didn't know what an agnostic was. They're like, atheists have no moral compass, right?
Right.
What would you say to that critique of atheism?
I personally, you have to, like, it makes you think more about what your compass is. Like, what are the right things? If you are a full-on, like, you're just believing in what the church you go to says, you're not really thinking why. So it definitely forces you to try and rationalize what is right and what is wrong, and if there's a good reason for it. Yeah. So I think it's a higher or as high as, you know, anyone who thinks about what they do and why, that's good. That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
There's no other option.
And I remember you come in and you were very passionate about very important things. Like, I remember there's one time, like, there was wolves that were being killed at, like, ridiculous rates in Yellowstone.
Yeah.
And you came in, you were just so angry. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, I should care about these wolves. Is there, like, a common thread through, like, the things that you care about or find,
yeah,
you know, worth fighting for, essentially?
Well, I think, and that's the thing with, like, I don't think religion is inherently bad. Like, I think there's a lot of philosophy that gets done and, like, makes people better. Like, there's Jainism is in India, where they believe that every creature is sentient and should not be killed. That's great. I mean, I like that. That seems very reasonable. Like, I look at it like all these people before me built this world where I have, like, medical care. We have cars. We have houses. We have a concept of heating or cooling. Like, none of us could have made air conditioner. So I appreciate that, and I want to make the world better. I want to make it better for people following me, just like was done for me. Mm-hmm. So that's my. And it's, you know, and that's why Jesus got so much street cred. Like, he was, you know, the do unto others. That's a great strategy. Like, you got a lot of stuff from other people. You should try and give that back to future generations, to other people. You know, just as a, it's what you'd want for you.
Yeah.
So that's my.
Excellent. So if you could name your three biggest reasons why you either left faith or why you could never go back, what would those three reasons be?
Oh, how long you got?
30 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, I think the most reasonable, the most, like, something that I've never heard anyone even come close to challenging is, like, there's a typhoon, and it kills 1,000 people and maims a bunch of people and hurts thousands and thousands of people. Why? Like, if there's a God, a loving God who cares about these people, it's not free will. It's not, you know, I mean, like, what, he could have easily, like, okay, the plate tectonics have free will, when the, you know, and they cause an earthquake, that causes a tsunami, and, like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I think that's a pretty good one. Yeah, there's just, I mean, just the fact that there's, you know, there's freaking pedophiles in the world. Yeah. I mean, their brain wants what it wants because it's messed up in some way. I mean, arguably. He could have made them not that way.
Yeah.
If he makes everybody, that doesn't, I mean, sure, you could say it's free will, but I don't think most people in here would be like, I remember when I chose not to be into that. Like, it's, yeah, and then, I mean, I have had, I've had a very bad year of, my mom had cancer, she died, it was incredibly rough, and you just think, like, I'm crushing up, you know, opium, whatever, drugs to give in a syringe to her, you know, every hour, so she can slowly die, not as painfully. And you think, like, what would this God thing be? Like, is he trying to make me and her suffer, or just get her out of here? I mean, there's a million ways to kill a person, and that's one of the worst. Mm-hmm. Like, so, I mean, that's like a pretty, my dad was always on the fence, and he's like, come on, like, yeah. This makes,
yeah,
you know, take away someone who has the religious one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'll never forget talking about your mom when we went out to lunch last time, and just like hearing you talk about like how you're taking care of her, and like, and just how people always wanted positive answers, and you're just like, there are none right now.
Yeah. How's she doing?
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah.
Not good, Bob.
Yeah. I remember when you asked, when you're bringing these suffering questions to, like when we were talking in college, like you were bringing them up, and he was talking to me about just like how much pain there is in the world and like where God is in the midst of that. I remember I was like, never been asked that before, really. Never really been thought about it. And I went to the pastor at our church up there, and I was like, hey, can you help me understand why like there's so much suffering in the world and like, you know, God that's all loving and all powerful? And he responded, he's like, well, you know, God works in mysterious ways. And I remember thinking, I'm out. I'm out. It was just the weirdest disconnect where I'm like, there was never, it was just like this refusal to actually think about it or live in it.
It's and a hard really thing hard. To think about and accept.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, it is.
Because it doesn't.
Yeah. So that's one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So number two.
That's a good one. That was all of them. That was the
that's
whole,
it?
Yeah, that
that's
was
one, two, and three?
One, two, and three. No, it's really just suffering. I mean, if you say, I mean, it could be, if I was a different, like, if I was talking to someone who said, Noah put animals on an ark, two by two, and, you know, that's, and then when the floods came down and the, you know, Australia existed, and he took all the marsupials, he put them over there, he took the old world apes and he put them in Africa, and he put the new world ones over here.
You're taking my arguments from college.
I mean,
I hear
like,
myself
come
right
on.
Now.
You know, like, you know, like that kind of stuff is like, whoa. Like,
yeah.
At the highest level, it's really just about the suffering. I mean, we don't, if you believe in that he's good and doesn't want suffering, and there is a lot of it, it doesn't jive.
Yeah.
But yeah, if we were talking some evangelical arguments, that would be a little fun, you know, like, the ark is a great one. The earth is 4,000 years old.
6,000, but 6, you know, 000. Not just kidding. Okay.
That's a big difference.
So I don't know. So I've been able to do some research since we talked about that.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if I told you where the 6,000-year-old earth model comes from.
No, but I want to know.
It comes from an Irish philosopher / theologian who decided to calculate the age of the earth, and his name is Usher. not that Usher, but his name is Usher. And in the 14th century, I believe it's 14th. If it's wrong, I'll definitely correct that. But it's the 14th century. He said, oh, the earth is 6,000 years old. And that was, almost 700 years ago.
Yeah.
And yet it's like, nope, this is... this is what it is. And I never heard Usher's name before or anything. Yeah. And that's stuck for a lot of reasons. And it's really interesting that that's
it's
where it comes
amazing.
From.
Like, what could the reason be? Like, why do they, why would they need it to be, why not older?
It comes down to just a fundamental distrust of science, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, science challenges all of us to think about our world and existence and God in brand new ways. So, for instance, think about the fact that we know that the Earth is 46 billion light years in diameter now, compared to 100 years ago, we probably thought it was, I don't know.
Right.
Like, I can't, like...
Yeah, as big as the Earth.
A light year? Yeah. One? Yeah, so that challenges you to change the way you think about things, where it's like, oh, we think that we're alone, and this is our planet, and that's it. And then you look out, and you're like, there's no way there aren't other planets out there that have to have life. I mean, it's just so big and vast that it can't.
Right.
That changes the way you think about things. And so rather than wanting to change the way people think about things, religion will ask you to double down to provide comfort, essentially.
I think it's to avoid the losing them.
Yeah. Well, and like the Franciscan Richard Rohr says, religion is often the easiest place to hide from God, which, yeah, see, that's a comment, yeah.
That's why I'm here.
well done. Yeah, and I think that's it. Like, rather than being like, oh my gosh, God is so much bigger than we possibly imagine, there are people who double down and say, if we find life anywhere on any other planet, in any form,
we're out.
Yeah, it invalidates the whole Bible, so we know they're not going to be there. It's like, but that's a smaller God that you're actively electing to choose or follow, yeah. Essentially. So that's why I think that
it also doesn't really address that. There's not like, and in Luke 45, there are no life forms on other planets. If you find it, none of this counts.
Well, what's interesting too is like in Genesis, like a lot of people like to double down on like the earth was made in, and these are actual words, 6 literal, contiguous, 24 consecutive periods. Right? 24 consecutive periods of days, right?
Wow.
Like, you have to double down on that because then, like, otherwise people say the days are symbolic and people freak out because, like, no, the Bible says day, it means day. What they don't often do is they don't read Genesis 2, which Genesis
just describe
2...
describe the earth spinning very slowly and days.
Well, and Genesis 2 talks about a different order of creation. And, like, in Genesis 2, trees are created after humanity, whereas in Genesis 1, it's the other way. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is... Christians will say, like, oh, that's a retelling. And it's like, no, it's a different story. And the Jewish tradition, like, you don't find Jews, like, arguing that the earth is 6,000 years old.
Right.
Because they know that there's two different stories, and they're like, oh, it's probably somewhere in between those. Yeah.
People before trees.
How about this one? How about this one? The earth before
oxygen?
Stars.
Yeah, earth before stars.
Yeah, it's not, that's a little tough to prove. We also talk about, like, here at Paradox, one thing we talk about is, like, if you believe the Earth is 6,000 years old, then you should be able to draw a line around the Earth that's 12,000 light years in diameter, right? A circle, because
right.
That's how big the universe should be. And that's 1/10 of the Milky Way.
Yeah.
And so there, either God tricks everybody, which is actually an explanation, which is weird.
Same with dinosaur bones.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, there's those.
Do you remember that? You asked me like to think about like what the craziest thing you believed in.
Yeah, so the question that you're referring to is in college we met each other. I was a bit more conservative than I am now. What was the most ignorant or ridiculous thing you heard me say about faith or reality during that time there? And I am already embarrassed.
Well, it was we were talking about evolution, I think, and how it definitely does not exist except for maybe in bacteria,
uh-huh.
Which was I think your
that
position.
Was my concession. Yep.
Because it's, like, really provable. And I was like, well, what about dinosaurs? And you were like, well, dinosaurs are just lizards that were bigger because there was more gravity.
This is so embarrassing. I cannot sit here.
Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right.
Noah was also a giant.
Noah was also what?
A giant.
Yeah.
He was older. He could live longer because he was bigger. Much like the lizards.
I was taught in a class that the people who lived before the flood were so much smarter because they used all of their brain.
Right.
Whereas we can only use like 10% or whatever, uh-huh. right? So they used all their brain. They were so smart they could clone dinosaurs and make them human amalgamations, right?
Wow.
And like, I remember being in class and being like, yeah, totally. And that's why God didn't put the dinosaurs on the ark, because they weren't God's creation. They were human creation.
Wow. And also, they were what you put.
Everyone's like, whoa, yeah.
<You're> so big. Sorry, guys.
Well,
aquatic ones, you'll be fine.
And I've seen the diagrams that argue against the geological column and this idea. And there's a geologist actually in our congregation, so I'm embarrassed about how I'm going to talk about this now. But the geological column and how, like, that's actually a falsehood, and the idea that you don't have earlier stuff buried down deeper.
Right.
And like they say, because the flood turned it over, like that's how it all got mixed up.
Like the Grand Canyon. I think also Grand Canyon was one of the ones that
you
were saying was flood related.
You at one point were asking me like where the world came from and like how it ended up being the way it was from my perspective. And there was one point I remember you saying, if you say the flood one more time, I'm going to hit you. is that right?
I mean, yeah,
okay.
Because it solves like, it's like a hand wavy, like, you know, what about, you know, continents being separated? Ah, flood. Pushed them apart. Water in between. Yeah.
Now, when I met you, you knew a Seventh-day Adventist. Is that right?
Yes, one of my aunts is a Seventh-day Adventist up in the Canada-Montana border. They farm wheat.
Wheat or weed?
Wheat.
Oh, good. It's like
wheat,
that's a liberal strain of Adventism.
Also, I think the climate is just not doable.
Not doable for up there.
Dry land farm and weed.
Yeah.
It's terrible again. She is very far on the... She would be one of the ones who would, you know, like... I'm, like, staying up till 2 in the morning until my dad takes over the, like, giving pain stuff to my mom. And she's, like, texting us that, it's fine. She's going to a better place. I won't say what I want to say to her. But, you know, it's just this, she thinks she's up in heaven and having a great time. And and that's a great, I mean, I wish I believed that, because it would be great. It would make you feel better, but it doesn't, I don't have any evidence of that. I mean, like, you know, ghost mom, show me a sign.
Yeah,
you know, that doesn't. Yeah. But yeah, she's, and they're so, they had 1 year where they had a good crop of wheat, like there was, the protein was high enough that they could sell it for beer, which is like triples the price of the wheat, and they're, I mean, they have no money, they live in a trailer and like just farm, and she wouldn't let her husband sell it for beer because, you know, God, you're going to hell then. It's like, I mean, you don't.
Yeah,
people drink beer. They're gonna get it. I don't know. Maybe that's too much, but yeah.
Well, I think that's so. We have a youth department here, and they were talking about like they're talking about Ecclesiastes this week, and they're speaking specifically about hope. And I know that there's this idea out there that Christians feel like people who don't have Christianity or have this promise of an afterlife or this belief of an afterlife can have any kind of hope. Like, what does hope look like for you? Like, do you feel like you're a hopeful person?
No, that's accurate.
Is what? No hope.
No. I mean, it's the same as, I mean, at the core, I think people, like, are you more concerned about, you know, where you're going to be when you're dead, or are you more concerned about what your children are going to be mm-hmm. when you're dead? Like, are you more concerned about the environment that you live in and that future people and animals and everything will live in? I mean, like, I think at all of our core, like, it does feel nice to think that there is this heaven, or, you know, that we're doing the right thing, we're going to go there. But really, don't you care more about the people around you and helping them mm-hmm. and be better? And, like, for me, that's it. The things you build in your life and the things that you get back are the things that give me hope,
mm-hmm.
not a future like bonus level.
Yeah. Bonus level. I remember when we were in college, like we would talk and we'd argue so much and all this stuff. And I remember thinking like, I mean, I've told you this before, and it's hard for me to say publicly, but one of the main reasons I wanted to be a pastor was because I liked hanging out with you so much that I wanted to make sure that if I could do anything to help you get into heaven, like, we could actually, you know, maybe
fix
maybe I could create a church that Ty's like, oh, this is cool, and then we could baptize you and all this stuff. It wasn't until I got to La Sierra where I did my graduate school, and the professor started pointing to this and saying, like, do you really believe that if God converts, if someone converts to a right religion or a specific religion, that God will all of a sudden love them more? And it's right then that I was like, oh, I'm guilty. And it was like, this whole idea was this like facade that was like being torn apart, which was this idea that people are worthy of God's love or just being loved in general because of their because of what they believe or what they practice. And when you look at what Christianity is at its core, it's this idea that every human being, just because they breathe, is bearing the image of divine, is therefore worthy of love regardless of race, gender identity, sexual orientation, socioeconomic status, or anything else that might divide us. And it's when I started looking at it from that perspective that things really began to change for me. So I guess where I was going with that is I really want to say I was sorry for treating you that way, because
I think I was probably pretty, we were up till like 2 a.m. every single night, or all night. I mean, we were,
architecture school is very brutal.
Our brains were.
Yeah. And like we'd finish doing these projects, and then the professor would tell us that we didn't work hard enough, and we're just like on the verge of tears being like, there is no more hours left to do this. So
You'd be like, oh, you cut out of that line there.
That was really annoying.
I could see an edge there.
Yeah. So we were up, you're saying we were up till 2, and...
Well, I'm just saying, like, yeah, we got into some good fights. Like, you know, like, your willpower goes down, and your fightiness goes up.
Yeah.
After a couple all-nighters in a row, but...
Yeah. And we did, and then we started doing a podcast together after college, and we named it Paradox, which ends up, the logo's the same and everything. We ended up using it for this church after some things happened over here.
Good things,
yeah. It's pretty exciting times. But I remember those conversations were really foundational, and like I remember talking to you, and you know, we recorded it, and people were just like, I just don't know why you aren't converting him. And I'm like, what? That's not what we're doing here.
Well, so that'd be a terrible show, especially the name Paradox.
Yeah, I know.
I'm on your side. Yeah, what are you talking about? Nothing.
Let me ask you, we talked a little bit about hope, but I'm curious about what you think about meaning. Because when I read Ecclesiastes, like the number one thing that comes out is like, this author, you know, has been told that if he believes in God, he'll find a lot of meaning. And he's found that after, you know, living his life and believing in God, that he's found that life is meaningless, which I would say is a lot like losing essentially what was handed to him. Christians would often critique an atheist and say, like, do you find that there's purpose or meaning in life? What would you say to that question or that idea?
Well, I think meaning is you have to build your own meaning in your life. I mean, you could be religious and believe in God and have no meaning. I mean, you could have nothing you enjoy in your life. You could have no people that you love or who love you. There could be no, you know, kind of point to your life. You haven't given it anything. You have received nothing in your life. I think it's really the same. I mean, I don't think you're going to get meaning by just reading the Bible. I mean, like, yes, God, I have meaning. I mean, you have to build your own meaning either way, mm-hmm. in atheist or agnostic or Jewish or Seventh Day, Eighth Day.
Eighth Day Adventist, or whatever.
Yeah, any of them, yeah.
Cool. And what do you think then, like, for you, what is a life of meaning or living a good life look like for you?
My meaning of life is, I'm trying to build a better, I mean, I'm an architect. I'm trying to build better things. I like the idea of being able to be creative with sites. And I mean, I get a lot of joy from really good, like just the way spaces feel. I mean, for me personally, that brings me to a higher level of like, oh, like I get the, like that, you know, that heart feeling of, mm-hmm. you know, goodness of, and I want to build things for other people, and I want the world to be slightly better when I'm dead. I want the people, I want my wife Eileen to be happy. I want, you know, my parents to be happy. I want people around me to have better lives. That's my meaning.
That is a great note to end on. Tyler, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being honest, and thank you for sharing these thoughts. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
My brothers and sisters, we are now ready to talk about the book of Ecclesiastes. May you see and embrace Jesus Christ